Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Now, this is our last show before spring break. So I thought I'd you know, have a guest on that we've run across each other a few times. He's in sort of the same business in our paths cross, let's say that.
Yeah.
And then the name is great, especially for the American audience. They'll think it's exotic. So the name of the podcast is the Dark Poutine Podcast, and the creator, owner, host, cook, janitor is Mike Brown.
That's me.
Always a lot of work, isn't there?
Oh yeah, my goodness! There's always so much to talk about. It's bizarre, and even here in Canada, I would think that I would be running out of crimes. I mean, we tend to be quite polite, but interestingly, there's a lot of stuff that bad things that happen here. So I'm not going to run out of stories. I think for probably around, I'm looking at 400 episodes now.
Oh, well, and if you do need some more, just hit me up. I'll go get something going.
Oh yeah, we are going to talk to you. Mostly Canadian true crime, so we cover cases that happened within the borders of Canada or that a Canadian was involved in some way outside of the Canadian borders. But we do every once in a while, we'll do what's called an away game, and it's sort of a play on hockey. So hockey players go away, they have home and away. So we have away games, and we've done away games like Chikatilo in Russia. Recently, we did the North Hollywood shootout, which is fascinating. But we do want to talk to you eventually about Rodney Alcala, because I know that you wrote a book, and I'm pretty fascinated with that case. So perhaps one day you and I will have a conversation on my podcast about Rodney Alcala.
yeah, I've had an interesting time with him.
I bet.
Yeah, on and off. Quite a bit of time, and quite a few people involved in the family, and that was one I couldn't go wrong. It seemed like every detective I needed to find that was covering the case, I had on the radio show or knew,
oh, wow.
or knew them, and I had wow. I had their cell phone number.
That's great.
What are you talking about? I just kind of thought, well, this is meant to be, I guess.
It makes it easy to write a true crime book when you have this, the detective on speed dial.
Yeah, yeah. And then we all got together. Oxygen Network in the States just did a show on it, and it was based on the book, and I was on for the hour.
Yep.
And yeah, I look pretty old.
Nah, you look great. I saw it. I am sad that we don't get Oxygen here in Canada, so I found it through nefarious means on the internet. But it's a great channel. I mean, I really wish we could get it here, but for some reason, our Canadian copyright laws or whatever, maybe interest, there's tons of interest in true crime here, but I don't know what it is that's preventing that channel in particular from being available here, because we want to see it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully soon. Eventually, I think it'll happen, you know, like anything.
Yeah, but you know, they'll have to put Canadian content in there due to our rules, and I don't think a lot of Americans want to learn about people stealing maple syrup.
Well, maybe once.
Maybe once, but not multiple shows on that.
But now, what you do, this differently. Like for us on the radio, what I do is I see cases, and I know lawyers and detectives,
yep,
and I know a lot of
yep,
people involved, all the way prosecutors, and some famous, some not. And
yep,
you see a case, and you kind of get interested, and you just kind of go with it. And what ends up happening is I'll follow the case, and then when the case is done, I'll get the court documents, I'll get the police records, I'll speak to the people that were involved, families and victims that survived, and then the killer or killers and their families. And I usually try to put together a book myself and put it up.
Yeah.
And so in that case, when I interview people on my day of the House of Mystery, it's 5 days a week, but I try to do the same thing. So I try to get people on that were out in the case working it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I can get some real information in the book, not just what you hear on the news.
Right.
So now what you guys do is you guys actually retell the story of the murder.
Or the
crime or whatever it is.
Yeah, essentially what we'll do is we'll retell the story around the crime, hopefully with a focus on the victims and their families. So we try to learn as much as we possibly can about them. I'm a big fat nobody. Well, I have been up until recently. It's been difficult for us to reach out, and we don't know, you know, how to contact people around this. So learning from people like yourself and other journalists, we are starting to sort of incorporate more of that into our world as well. And I think that's just a natural progression of our show. We started out just wanting to tell true crime stories, just from our perspective, but we want to have more people, on our show to talk about the facts and those kind of things. So, that's why I'm reaching out to people like yourself and other authors and journalists about these kind of things, because you guys can teach me a thing or two, and then perhaps I don't have to be the guy who just looks at court documents and tries to sort out the truth from the fiction in books and things like that. I can also have people who were there on our show and have conversations with them. So that's what I'm leading to. But right now, I think our show is pretty fun. Like, I mean, we do tell a story, and it's from a uniquely Canadian perspective, too. There's always that spin on it that only Canadians can bring, I think.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, there is a Canadian sense of humor that, believe me, when you're in certain states, they do not get it.
Yep. I'm well aware of that.
And sometimes they even get angry.
Yes. Oh, we've had that too.
Yeah.
Our 1-star reviews we're just making fun. We just are having fun. Sometimes we have said things about the current American president that we don't mean any harm. but we have had very vitriolic reactions about. So we tend to steer away from that now. It's probably better for our health.
Well, you can look at it that way. I think for the most part, in history, this is the first time it's so so serious.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I make jokes about Trump all the time. I make jokes about Hillary and everybody. I just make, you know, if someone does something funny, it's funny.
It is.
You know, and that's my Canadian right side's going, you know, this is silly. You know, it doesn't mean you hate the person.
No.
It just, it's just funny. Trump's hair is funny.
It is funny and ridiculous, and I would like to learn about the complexities of what on earth does his morning look like? How does he get it to a point where, you know, it's acceptable for him to walk out the door? It's got to be quite a trial. I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, he's probably got someone blowing orange tan on his face, and he's twittering, and he's got his hair up, and
you paint quite a picture.
And then at the same on the fox going on the side, and
yeah,
and you know, but this is funny. If that was Hillary in that boat, I'd be laughing too. Hair and curls.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I think they're way too uptight, but that's because we are Canadian and get more of a.
Yeah.
You know, we don't get upset at like that. There's a few, but.
I love the U.S. It's tough for me to watch how divided the country is right now. I mean, we've had great experiences in the United States every time we've been there, and we know lovely people from the United States on both sides politically. And but now, you know, those people who we care about are at odds. It's very tough to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. No, I go through the same thing. I have people, and I try to stay neutral, but you know, most people know I'm kind of to myself, and, I have a close core of people that work with me, and they know I'm kind of a cynic, and I kind of make fun, and it's all sarcastic, and it's, you got to have a little dark humor, because if you don't laugh, it's just what's the point of living?
I worked in a cemetery. I was a grave digger at one point in a cemetery, and I learned a lot about, if you will, grave humor, working there. You know, you have to you're dealing with such a tough subject all the time. Police, paramedics, doctors. Some of those people that I've met, because I also worked in security and would have to be in those areas, some of them have the darkest senses of humor of anybody that I've ever known. And it's just the way they deal with their day-to-day. Otherwise, they'd all be suffering horrible PTSD.
Yeah. Do you know, I did an interview ways back with Dr. Catherine Ramsland. And she spent 5 years with the BTK killer.
Yes.
And did a big book on it and did a whole analysis of him and you know, really interesting. So we did a show. And she was talking, and we were talking, you know, just about things. And then she goes, you know, quite often, different days, this killer would see himself as different people.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, how do you know who he was seeing himself with? And she said, well, you'd have to ask or kind of work your way into it. But one of the things that was funny was, he saw himself as Britney Spears.
Weird.
And he's in prison, and, they'd be in there, discussion in interview room, and so how do you feel like today? And I feel like Britney Spears, and have his wig on and have his and act very feminine, and he felt very happy feeling like Britney Spears.
That's very, very strange.
Well, yeah, you know, like, wow. Well, you know, these are the things you don't really hear about, you know.
No.
And so I thought that was crazy. Incredible good information. And so we're talking a little later on the show, and then I said, and she said, well, you know, if we could go a little bit longer. And I said, well, I'll have to check to see how I feel. I'm feeling a little bit like Britney Spears right now. And, of course, she laughed and I laughed, and it was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean,
4,000 complaints to the station.
Are you serious?
4,000.
Because you said you feel like Britney Spears in relation to BTK feeling like Britney Spears.
Yeah, they were primarily upset because we were making fun of a murderer and making fun of all the people that he made suffer and killed. And
good Lord,
we were making light of it, and this was not something to be made light of. And that's the roundabout of every single one of those. How can you laugh like things like that?
We have had experiences like that with our show too, where people are offended by our humor. But we try not to ever be disrespectful to the crime, to the victim, and we even try to understand the criminal himself. Although my co-host likes to call them various colorful words, we try not to be disrespectful to that process at all, because it's a really fine line to walk. Are you doing it tastefully, or is it like just like I don't know? And if I get that twinge in my gut like that, I don't know. I don't know if this is somewhere where we should go. It probably doesn't make the main show. But that said, we are two guys who have a great sense of humor, and so sometimes there are going to be things that, you know, that just make us laugh, because otherwise we'd be crying. I don't want to cry through my entire show.
Well, and I think it's just a way of dealing with what it is we're dealing with.
Exactly. It's a natural human reaction, actually. Humor to a very dark situation is a very healthy way to deal with, as Carl Jung called it, the shadow. We never quite are able to contact that directly, but humor is a way for us to contact that darkness without it affecting us too negatively.
Yeah, I think, and we all find our ways, but that's what works for me, and so we even call it a dark, cynical, comedic look at unsolved mysteries in crime history, paranormal, and different. So I guess I want it to be entertaining. I want it to be factual. But I also want it to be relaxed. I didn't want a heavy show.
No, and some people will tell me they would rather me just share the dry story, and they don't want my co-host there making comments or anything, because he doesn't do any show prep or anything like that. He's kind of like Ed McMahon or Andy Richter. He comes in and he does his role very, very well. He's an excellent guy, Scott Hemingway. Great photographer, loves black and white photos, but people poo-poo what we do sometimes because they don't get it. Like, I actually need this guy there so I don't go completely insane telling this really, really dark story. He's there to help me. He's there to help me get through this really dark thing. When I'm talking about Clifford Olson, for example, that man murdered 11 children, and horrifically murdered, coldly murdered 11 children in our neighborhood. We live in Surrey, and he did his things here and in Coquitlam and Richmond. So us talking about that, it's a very personal thing. I went through an attempted abduction when all the Clifford Olson stuff was going on as an 11-year-old boy. And I remember connecting to that case very, very personally. So Scott bringing his humor to help me out, to get me through that is a godsend. You know, I really, really, I need that in my life. I need a little bit of humor with my darkness. Otherwise, it's all darkness. I've been a depressive and major depression for a lot of my life. And, you know, I found my way out through humor. You know, if I can't laugh at myself and the situation I'm in, I'm screwed. I really am.
Oh, totally. I'm in the exact same boat. I go through the same feelings up and down like a toilet seat.
Yeah. Well.
Well, it's true. A clean toilet seat.
A clean one. There you go.
There you go. Yeah. No, it's I really like having a co-host that does the buffer.
Yeah.
And that kind of it just gives you that rail. Yeah. I think it makes the show better.
I think
actually, sorry, we actually just lost our main co-host, so.
Oh dear. Yeah, well, that sucks. So, I mean, did he move or?
No, he's going to, he's going to go into a political show.
Oh, there you go.
For a conservative, group.
So he's just doing his thing.
Yeah, it hasn't started, and that's kind of, I guess that was the direction he wanted to take in. Mm. And that's fine. Like I said, people come and go, so we'll see what happens next.
Yeah. So, what was his role for you?
He was my buffer. He was the
there you go, the
fill in, and because what we do is we're 5 days a week, so we're running usually a true crime day, and then we run a conspiracy day.
Cool.
Well, the conspiracy day we do with Dr. Joe Yusinski.
Okay.
And he's out of University of Miami, and he's written some books, and he does things from critical thinking, skeptical. He's logic. So it's not easy to I think he does a great show. Great show.
There you go. And that's awesome.
And then we've got Julie Saab. She's a medium from Most Wanted out of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And she does our Friday paranormal show. And then we have Stephen David Lampley.
Hmm, I know that name.
He's Crimes and Forensics. He's written a lot of books, and he's been on Nancy Grace a lot. He does our Tuesday show, Crime and Forensics with Steve.
There you go.
And there you have it. We have a little bit of everything.
That sounds like fun. That sounds like a fun week.
Yeah, actually, it is usually.
Yeah.
You know, it is, because we get to cover a lot of mysteries from a lot of different angles, and we would kind of float off of each other as well. So, you know, if one person can't make it, another host can make it, you know. So we'd like to run with two throughout each show if we can.
Yeah, sure, that makes sense. You know. So, as far as show prep and those kind of things, what does that look like for you? Are you like completely prepping shows all week long, or are you relying a lot on what your guests bring? I don't know.
Well,
what that looks like.
You know, that took a lot of years to you find your way. And for me, when I watch a lot of interviews or see a lot of radio or TV, the things I don't like are the common things.
I gotcha.
The basic, the standards. The this woman getting run over by a car, and how does that make you feel? Well,
it's pretty bad.
Yeah, you know, you lost two kids, and how are you feeling now?
Well, yeah,
you know, I'm sort of not really into any of that stuff. I prefer to get as much information about the person as I can.
Mm-hmm.
I contact all of them. I ever since the beginning, like 10 years now, I've always, coming from production, I always got the contact information and did all the communications, set everything up. And then what I usually do with guests is try to find out what it is that they would like to talk about, what's most important to them,
yeah,
and what's not. And, yeah, of course, their book or movie will be promoted by the website and a mention. But I don't want to just sit there and focus on that. And right now I've got a team that's all on the same wavelength. I think that we will ask them questions that they don't expect.
Yeah, that's great. That's really cool, actually.
You know, we had the Witch of Salem on, you know?
Okay.
And Julie and I, it was like the first thing was like, so what's it like having sex with the Witch of Salem?
Oh, wow.
And you know, they're not going to get something very standard.
And so do you prepare them for that?
I think most of them get to know it now. Most of them know us. The first year, it was a little bit bumpy.
Yeah.
But most of them like it, and most of them, because it's not mean-spirited. I mean, it was kind of even a joke where this witch had a daughter that started dating men, and it's like, it just came to me, okay, I'm dating this girl, and I'm coming home to mother, and she's a witch?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. How do you reconcile that?
You know, and, you know, but I think for me, the success of an interview is making a connection and having a good conversation. And you both learn something from each other, and the audience does as well. And at the end of the hour.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If they're driving, like a lot of our people are driving when they hear us.
Hopefully you haven't driven into a river or anything
like that. Yeah, or they're driving to the studio to pick at us. But if they're in or if wherever they are, online driving, hopefully it interests them enough. They go, well, that person was pretty cool. I liked what he or she said. I liked that. That was
cool.
And they'll at least go to the website, the book site, and maybe buy something of theirs.
Yeah, like yesterday I had the opportunity to talk to Morgan Knudsen, who is a paranormal investigator out of Edmonton. And we were talking to her specifically about the Great Amherst Mystery. So in Amherst, Nova Scotia in 1878 to 1879, a young girl named Esther Cox was haunted. She went through this very well-documented poltergeist experience. You can Google it. It's pretty easy to learn about. But Morgan and I had never met, and I interviewed her probably for about 45 minutes, but I left feeling like, wow, I really enjoyed that. I felt like she learned a little bit from me about sort of what we do, but I learned so much from her, and I just want to talk to her every time I do a paranormal show, you know? Like, now it's like I've got my go-to person if I want to have a conversation about ghosts or poltergeists or hauntings or anything like that.
Yeah. And you know, and over years, you do develop quite a rapport with people, quite a group of people.
Yeah, it's like I say, this is all new to me. I'm learning as I go, and I think this is the way to go. I'm kind of glad I didn't go to like the go to be like a DJ in radio, and you know, this was and that is, or you know, that kind of stuff. I have gotten to do what I really want to do right out of the gate. So I'm a very, very lucky guy in that way.
Yeah. Well, I did. I was in on C89 in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing dance music, disco, and it was
sure
a good lesson for me. I didn't mind that. I
could have done it, but...
I've always been a radio guy since I was five.
Mm-hmm.
Young. I always had crystal radios, radio. Listened to old shows, talk shows. That was who I was. So that's where it came from for me. You know, and I think that's why I went into it sort of how, like you say, because now I've got a Rolodex here, or a phonodex.
Yeah.
Of some incredible guests I've met now that I have their personal numbers, we're friends, and I actually get to meet when they're in town or if I'm out of town. And some people that I would have never thought I'd even would have met in my life.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm getting to meet the coolest people. I have family members of murder victims emailing me, telling me I did a fantastic job of telling their story and how we were so kind to their relative, and they want their relatives' last moments to be remembered in that way. Which is like, wow, that's really flattering. I would have never gotten to know that person had I not sort of put it out there. And also, like you say, now prior to when I'm doing this research, I'm actually grown a little bit of a backbone, and I'm reaching out to people prior. And more than not, people are more than willing to have a conversation about what went on, as long as they know that you're not somebody who is there to sensationalize or insult them.
Yeah, it's more about that. Yeah, there's so many angles to it that they want to protect themselves. But I've been producing for so many years. I can call Roger Stone before he goes to jail.
He probably should. He's gonna probably be away for a while.
Yeah, I had him on before.
Just unless he gets pardoned by that certain somebody.
Yeah, Mr. Orange.
Yeah, I'm wondering what's gonna happen with all that. I mean, you know, I don't quite understand the whole thing or what the crime was or that kind of stuff. Like, the Russian was he colluding with Russians? Is
Well,
how much?
I think the big thing is that it was set up to see if Russia was interfering in the election process.
Which they were.
And having any collusion of any of the president's aides or support team or employees type thing.
Yeah.
And so that happened. And what's gone down is over the last couple of years, now you've got, what, at least six that have already been indicted and charged and booked in the collusion, in the, you know, it, when it comes to a level of an aide doing something, you're interrupting in crime.
Mm-hmm.
It's not direct collusion, but you're doing it for someone. And you know, the thing is, there was a lot of illegal activities.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are going to jail for it. And my opinion is that most of it's about money.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think any of it's about Russia, U.S., or anything. I don't think Trump could care less about U.S. any more than he could about anything. He's a money guy. He's a capitalist.
Yeah.
And that's all he is concerned about. He doesn't care about gays, blacks, Mexicans, anything. He can put on a little bit of a show, but he really doesn't care about anything but getting business done.
Yeah. You know,
getting deals for himself.
It's all about getting paid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that they'll pay for it down the road because they now have a huge deficit that will take forever to get rid of.
Yeah.
And they're not really in a country equipped to work their way out of it like they used to be before years ago.
Right.
So it's kind of a mess.
It is. It looks like a mess from where I sit. It looks.
That's why I laugh when we hear about things about Trudeau or about the Lanvin deal and all this. I just sort of think, God, wow, this is pretty funny.
Well, so Trudeau was censured by the Conservative Party for eating a chocolate bar on the floor yesterday. So, in the House of Commons, our Prime Minister snuck a chocolate bar into the House of Commons and ate it on the House of Commons floor and was called out by the Conservatives later on. So, we're very happy that the Conservatives have the most important things on their mind to call our Prime Minister out on. Like, oh my God. And he said, I'm sorry, it was a chocolate bar.
Yeah, it's funny because when they talk about that, I just think, oh, God, can you be any more embarrassing?
We're very quaint up here, I guess, you know.
Well, yeah, it's all good. It's all good. At least it's things are pretty good overall, and we should be happy.
There you go.
How long do you take to put together one of your episodes? On average,
It depends on the episode, really. Some of them I know very well. Like, for example, when we did our Ed Gein episode, I pretty much wrote that in an afternoon because I had read and knew so much about the facts. I just had to go do just a little bit of fact checking on it. But other ones will take me. The average is about three days of writing, just to make sure that it's presentable and ready to go. So, yeah, about 3 days.
Now, are you scripting a show and just kind of going over the crime, or are you actually pretend to have an episode with people that are acting different roles?
It's just me telling the story, but sometimes I will put on an accent myself just for fun. And some people really, really like that. Like we did, Harry Houdini. And so I did a bit of an accent for that one. I obviously wouldn't do, too much of an accent for, you know, say I'm going to be a serial killer or something. And I don't want people giggling at my accent as I'm a serial killer, but, yeah, mostly it's just tell the story of the crime from beginning to end and bed in some music and those kind of things. But we try very hard to be factual. And like I say, there's a lot of different true crime books. I think people just make stuff up. Mm. Yeah, which is kind of crappy because, okay, this made up thing that you say, is that true? Like, I don't know. Like, if I can't find corroborating information in at least three other places, then I don't bother with it. So,
yeah, it's really tough. I've noticed that because a lot of the podcasts lost my interest because they would just sort of say things that I were kind of thinking, well, that's not even close. Or,
yeah, that's and not I true. And I don't want to be that guy either. So it's very hard for us, like, these little true crime podcasters who are just learning, and we want to tell the story. We want to, you know, Canadian crime, a lot of it has been forgotten over the years, and we're a very regional country. You'll hear about a crime in BC if you live in BC, but you won't hear about it in Ontario or the Atlantic provinces at all. which is interesting, unless it's been a big thing like a serial killer like Cody Ledgebakoff or someone like that. People in Eastern Canada will know who that is, but we don't hear about those things here. So that's kind of what I'm trying to do, is tell stories from every different province, because there will be people in other provinces who haven't heard the BC stories. There will be people in other provinces who haven't heard the Manitoba stories, you know. So that's why I feel like I'm able to provide something that Canadians, quite frankly, don't get from the regular media, which is real Canadian stories.
Well, the media's tied down by law as well.
Yeah.
That's why we can't have shows like Nancy Grace and,
well,
you know, all that stuff.
I mean, I'm not, I don't talk a lot about Unsolved because I'm tied down by laws as well. So Unsolved murders specifically, I can't come out and say, this guy's got to be the one who did it, because I would find myself in court very quickly here in Canada. So, Nancy Grace does what she does, and she does it very loudly, so it is what it is.
No, it's true. I think that, but that's just it. You know, in Canada, there's a lot of privacy laws, and there's also, like when I was doing the Russell Williams things, and even the girl that was attacked was still 19 during the 2017 trial where she won money. We still couldn't use her name.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that here. I run into that a lot when I'm trying to cover Canadian cases. There's one, for example, in Red Deer, and it's a fascinating case about a 12-year-old girl who, along with her boyfriend, killed her parents and her younger brother. But because of privacy laws and the fact that naming her parents would identify her, I can't talk about that case, which is it drives me insane, because it's a really, really compelling case. Very interesting. I could talk about it in a way where everybody has an alias, but I don't know, that just doesn't kind of have the same weight to it in a way.
Yeah, it's pretty strange. Now, where do you see you're taking your podcast? Like, where is it going to end up? If I hate to say that stupid question, but in 5 years, where do you see yourself?
Well, I mean, honestly, I have always had an interest in documentary film, so I would like to be doing something a little more video-wise with our show, and I'm starting to learn a little bit more about how to get that done. I spent a lot of time working in film, film production and that kind of thing, so I really have a good understanding of it, but I want to be the guy in front of the camera or doing the creative and not be the plebe who's, you know, moving the garbage cans. So there's a little bit of work that needs to happen before that can go on. So I'm just learning about producing and things like that. Eventually we're going to have some video. I can see what we would really like to do is take our show and do, you know, a certain number of episodes every season, where we cover a single case in a different province in Canada, and we actually go there and tell the story in the town where it's happening, where it had happened. So we would have the people on who were related to it and all that kind of stuff. It's sort of like a campfire talk, but it would be a true crime campfire talk.
Yeah, that's an excellent idea. I think it is. You can turn it into a reality show.
Exactly. Well, I don't want to be murdered. I don't mind covering my co-host being murdered. I mean, no, that's not true. I love Scott. He's a great guy. But I do definitely want to do something like that, where I can bring Canadian stories to other Canadians that they may not have heard otherwise. That's always kind of been my thing, is just because I'm a Canadian through and through. Scott and I are like Bob and Doug McKenzie. Our presentation is a little bit like that. Or if you're Canadian, you know of the Red Green Show. Do you know the Red Green Show?
Yeah.
And his, so it's Red Green, the grumpy old fart with the beard, and and Harold, his nerdy nephew, who's with him. That, so I sort of see I'm the grumpy old man with the beard, and Scott is the nerdy nephew.
But, well, yeah. There you go, a whole new outlook on dark poutine. The name. The name. Why did you choose the name?
Well, there was already a podcast called Canadian True Crime, so we couldn't do that. I mean, I could have. I could have been a jerk about it and gone ahead and did that. But I like Christy's show, and she does a fantastic job. So I thought, I need to come up with something that helps me to stand out. And one thing is, like, what's the most Canadian thing I can think of? And it's poutine. And for Americans who don't know, poutine is French fries with beef gravy and cheese, melted cheese curds. It's fantastic, and it will probably give you a heart attack at some point if you eat too much of it.
Yeah.
It's a heavy thing. It's super heavy. You can't get enough of it, and it's a little bit cheesy. So poutine actually really does cover what the show is, and dark poutine, and you know, we talk about pretty dark things, talking about serial killers' crimes, UFOs, ghosts and all that kind of stuff. I think darkness is a good adjective.
What you know? So you had an interest for all the crime and stuff. What brought you in with the UFOs and paranormal side?
I've always just been interested in that as well. I don't know how much I really believe. I think I'm a healthy skeptic, but. I would like to believe that these things exist, and there's so many of those kind of stories people are telling across Canada. Canada, you know, every year has almost 2,000 UFO reports, which is fairly interesting. And so, why not cover some of those? Bigfoot, the Sasquatch, Ogopogo, all those kind of things. Are they real? I don't know, but I'd like to investigate and have a conversation about them, and maybe I'll learn something, or maybe I won't. I don't know. Maybe it really is just a guy in a gorilla suit.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Or down in Surrey, I see a few.
There's definitely that here. And we don't talk about a lot of crime here in Surrey, specifically the organized crime, because we want to be alive at the end of our shows. we would rather not talk about, like, for example, the Surrey Six. I am never going to approach that with a 10-foot pole, because the guys who perpetrated that are still out walking around. So I am not interested in having any conversation about my opinions about that particular case.
Yeah, it's probably better to stay away from stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And motorcycle enthusiasts as well. Like, we'll steer clear of those people too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, much safer.
Yeah.
Wow. So, something in my throat here. Very interesting. Very interesting. What is your biggest influence?
My biggest influence. I loved Art Bell. I loved Art Bell when I was a kid. Well, not necessarily a kid, but, you know, I used to drive security at night. And so I would just listen to Art Bell, the Art Bell show. Right. I also was really into unsolved mysteries when I was a little kid, and Robert Stack.
Yep.
I thought that guy was fantastic. You know, like, he told all those stories, and some of them were Canadian stories too. And so it's like, I kind of want to be the Canadian Robert Stack. But I don't have that great voice that he had. Oh, yeah, that gravelly kind of. But yeah. So and another thing, I think the other thing that got me into true crime was what I mentioned to you earlier. I was actually the victim of a crime when I was 11 years old. On the day that Charles and Diana were married, July 29th, 1981, I was walking home from playing some floor hockey with my buddies, and a man grabbed me and tried to drag me into the woods and told me that he was going to do various and sundry dirty things to me. And that was my first quote-unquote sexual experience in my life, was this man being violent with me. I did end up getting away, screaming and yelling and running to a neighbor's place. It was only about 200 meters away from my parents' home. But that really affected me for a long time. My reactions to seeing him around town later on, those kind of things. And I became really interested in the human condition and crime as a result of that. And I was later, in another situation where, a gentleman, tried to make hamburger out of my head on a brick wall over a mutual girlfriend that we had. So I have been, let's say, involved in a couple of crimes in the victim aspect. Yeah, it wasn't pleasant, but I had to go to court for that particular one, the later one, where I had to testify against that gentleman, and he was actually convicted. So I guess it's those couple of events really got my interest in true crime, and then somebody gave me a copy of Helter Skelter, and I guess the rest is history.
That it all began.
Yeah.
It all began. Well, that's pretty interesting. And any other, what kind of shows do you like to watch? Music?
Music, I mean, I'm a grunge fan. I like Nirvana. We went to, when Kurt Cobain died, my wife and I, both of us really loved Nirvana, and she wasn't my wife at the time, she was my girlfriend. Then we drove down to Seattle, and we hung out in the park right next door to Kurt and Courtney's house. And just hung out with a bunch of kids. Like, there was probably six or seven. It was about a week and a half, a week after he had killed himself, and it was after the big sort of funeral they had for him in Seattle. But kids were still hanging around there, and I can remember just like going there and being there, and there was a note on the tree from Courtney Love, who, you know, had left a little bit of a thank you for our love of Kurt kind of thing. Yeah. And I took some folks out to get them some beer. So I drove out to get some beer. And in the meantime, after we came back, we found that Courtney had given a couple of Kurt's sweaters away. And so I missed out on having an authentic Kurt Cobain sweater by probably about 5 minutes.
Oh.
I know. But.
Well, listen, I know Courtney.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And I appreciate, like, you taking time to talk to somebody like me, because I don't know. Like, I'm just new. I'm just getting things going. And it means a lot that people who have been around the business and actual journalism and those kind of things are paying attention to us a little bit. It, you know, it really, really means a lot to get people's time.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.